This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello, and welcome to Open Eyes. So guys, today is, let me see here, Friday, April 17th, 2015. And we have had quite a couple of weeks here at Open Eyes Network, and especially here on this show. There have been a lot of changes that have been going on in the background of things. There have been a lot of interesting things that have been going on, and I hope that you guys have been dealing with the changes okay. I've gotten a lot of good feedback about how things are going at the moment, and I definitely appreciate all the great feedback that I've gotten. For those of you who may be just tuning into the changes that have been going on, basically, we've really become integrated into the Late Night in the Midlands radio network, and I have essentially become the program director over there at the network, and it's been a really big change that's going on, and at the moment the network over there is going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's going to be now permanently that way. And we are looking for new shows to fill in some of the slots that are there. So for those of you who are listening, if you have a show yourself that is, you know, kind of a similar vein, if you are interested in doing a show and you think that you have what it takes and all that kind of good stuff, then please don't hesitate to let us know. You can send me an email to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com, and we can see about getting you started on broadcasting through us. It's definitely a lot of changes that have been going on, and I'm glad that you guys have been dealing with it. So we do have a couple of new shows that are coming to the network for those of you who are not aware. Right now we're starting with Steve Miller's, not the musician, but Stephen Miller's The Real World. That's playing at 6 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the evening each weekday. That's Eastern Standard Time. And it's a really good show. I definitely recommend tuning into it. And you know, just a lot of new changes, a lot of new things that are going on, and hopefully you guys will tune in. Stay tuned in and definitely get to the core of the truth. That is what this network is all about. So definitely. For those of you who have not listened to the Late Night in the Midlands radio network, please go over there and take a listen. It's at latenightinthemidlands.com. And you can also find on my network page, my openeyesnetwork.com, I have a listen live button that's right there. And essentially all you have to do is hit the big blinking button and it'll take you right to the page where you can listen to the live stream that's coming in. You can also listen to everything through TuneIn Radio, which is an app that's available on all platforms, really. And we also now are in iTunes as of basically today. We're listed in there. You can find it on the internet radio section of iTunes. There's no specific link to get to it, at least not that I'm aware of. If you guys know how to link directly to it, please let me know. Again, feedback at openeyesnetwork.com. So that's it for the changes as far as the network is concerned. Today's episode, I want to touch on the topic of education. And it's been a while since I've touched that topic, and there have been a lot of things that I've run across that I feel that you guys really need to hear about. And before I get to that, of course, I have some news for you guys, and I'm going to kind of intersperse some of the news throughout this episode as well. The first bit of news that I have that I ran across is one that I guess really made me kind of shake my head and wonder how we've gotten to this place. And I kind of know the answer to it, unfortunately, but let me read this out to you guys. So in Maywood, Illinois, which is a Chicago suburb, the fire chief there named Craig Bronow ordered all American flag stickers and military decals be removed from the firefighters' lockers. His reasoning is that American flags contribute to a culture of racism. The fire chief has actually also relieved four firefighters of duty for not complying with this new regulation that he has put out. So just like all the other news stories that I bring you guys, I'll have a link for this one on my show notes for this show, which will be at openeyesnetwork.com/OE095. And on that news article, you can see the chief talking about this and quoting directly that this is basically promoting a culture of racism. Now, okay, this type of thing has been coming up a lot over the past couple of years. I've seen story after story of people who are trying to claim that displaying the American flag is an act of racism. I understand where they're coming from with it. I understand why they're basing their stupid decision off of, you know, what they're coming at it from. I know the angle that they're coming at it from. This is basically playing into the hands of the New World Order type of thinking and thinkers. They want things to become more global. They want things to become more of a globalized society, which is not a bad thing. Okay, don't get me wrong with this. It's not a bad thing to think that humanity should be united under one umbrella and that we should progress forward out of the ideas of racism and nationalism and on and on and on. But the problem with that is that those who are currently trying to enact this type of thing do not have the best intentions of humanity in mind. So that's the first and foremost thing that I'll say regarding this subject. Now, the second thing is, and it's a little bit lesser, but not really all that much, but I have to ask the question, how is displaying a flag of a nation or a nationality being racist? This American culture that we have is known as the melting pot, right? Because we have so many different races, so many different cultures, so many different tenets and creeds and so on and so forth, all combining together in this great big social experiment that they've been running for the past 200 plus years. And that is in and of itself not a race, okay? I understand, again, the idea that they're trying to put forward that if we display the American flag, then it's going to be insulting towards the Mexicans that come up, which again contributes to the idea of racism. That alone contributes to the idea of racism. You see, by talking about the American flag being a racist symbol, you are in and of yourself being racist because you think that another nation is all one race. In other words, that the Mexican flag essentially only covers people that are Latino, only covers people that are of that, you know, Spanish descent, right? So, again, it's not a race thing. It's a national thing. And so this guy who is doing what he can to contribute to the idea that we are still pinned down and held down under this stupidity is doing the whole thing a complete disservice. So I had to bring that one to you guys and give my thoughts on this whole issue with it all. So now the chairman of the House committee who is investigating the Benghazi terrorist attacks, quote unquote, said Wednesday that his panel lacks the authority to subpoena Hillary Clinton's private server. Trey Gowdy, the representative who's in charge of this whole thing, said that while the House has authority to issue a subpoena for the server on which the former Secretary of State stored her personal and professional emails, the Select Committee on Benghazi has a, quote, more limited jurisdiction. He said, for my committee, which has a more limited jurisdiction, we, number one, lack the authority under the House rules to subpoena the server. He said this in an interview with radio host Hugh Hewitt. The House as an entity, it's an open legal question, but most experts believe that the House could subpoena that server. Now, my question for this is, if you don't have the authority to subpoena the server, then why is the question even being asked of you? This is a matter of distraction, you see. They're throwing this at somebody, basically, that can't do anything with it, who's going to be sitting there saying, well, I'll try, but I can't do anything. What do you expect me to do? Whereas the actual people who could do something about this don't bother. They are passing it off. They're passing the buck along. So this whole thing, I think, is really still important to keep pushing because, you know, Clinton over the weekend here, she announced that she is going to be making the run for the presidency, which would be an absolute terrible thing. It would be a nightmare for the American people. I'm just going to state that right out. And, you know, if it comes down to it, Jeb Bush is no better. Okay, let me just get that clear. But and none of them are. But Clinton, at this point, is flat out disqualified from being able to run for president. And why people are not really speaking this aloud, I don't know. But according to the U.S. Code 18, Section 2701B, any federal employee, of which Clinton has been while she was Secretary of State at the State Department, right? Any federal employee who knowingly or unwittingly destroys any kind of federal documentation is subject to fine, jail, and is exempted and forbidden from holding any public office. So that alone, with this whole email stuff, that alone is enough for anybody to be able to come up to her and say, you can't run for president. So the fact that they're not doing this shows me that these people want her in. And they're going to do it regardless of whether they're quote-unquote obeying the rules of which they themselves put into place. You know, if they were being fair, basically, if they were playing straight, then the question would not even be asked. You know, she would just be gone. She'd be out. She'd already be sitting in jail. So, yeah. I just thought it was humorous that he claims that he doesn't have the authority to do it. Well, if you don't have the authority to do it, then why the hell is it in your hands? Yeah. It's pretty obvious when you guys think about this. So the ICE director, in another thing regarding authority, which, you know, I did my episode on Monday respecting my authority. This all follows right on the heels of all of that. So the ICE director, Sarah Saldana, told a subcommittee of the House Budget Committee that a directive from Barack Obama trumps congressionally passed laws. As a law enforcement officer, she has a duty to uphold U.S. immigration law as well as the Constitution, which says in no uncertain terms that Congress has the sole responsibility to pass laws. But she disagrees. She claims that any kind of directives that is given by the executive branch, in other words, by Barack Obama, supersedes any kind of congressional authority or congressionally passed laws. Now, this falls on the idea as well that the Supreme Court is very soon going to be hearing a case that is essentially going to determine whether or not the president is considered to be above the law and whether or not his executive orders essentially can trump any and all laws that are out there. And my personal opinion is that they're going to go with it, that's what they're shooting for. I mean, they have so far done everything that they can do to essentially back this administration on everything that they do. And they have destroyed the rights that we have under the Constitution. They've already done so. I mean, look into some of the things that they have. Well, basically over the past few months, even come out and said are now the law of the land. And you guys will see just how shameless these people are when it comes to their support of this administration and its ability to break every law that we have in this country. A great example is them saying basically that in the 1960s, they said that ignorance of the law is no excuse. But just a couple of months ago, they said that a police officer who either through not knowing the law, basically, is exempted from being punished for breaking the law. So essentially, we, the people, ignorance of the law is no excuse. But police officers, ignorance of the law is every excuse. So, yeah, that's how this stuff is going. That's the path that they're leading us down. And again, like I said before, I think one of the reasons why they want to push Clinton into place as far as being president goes is to essentially be the next dictator in chief and nobody will say boo about it because, oh, well, she's the first woman president. You can't say anything about it. Just like saying anything about what Obama does wrong, you immediately get called a racist. And that's how it is. If a guy then was to come out while Clinton was in presidency and doing things incorrectly, if a guy says, well, she's doing things against the law or she's breaking the law or on and on and on, then what's the knee-jerk reaction going to be? Well, you're a misogynist. You're just a man. You're just pissed off that there's a woman that's a president now. And that's going to be the big go-to excuse. It's just how it's going to go. This is the pattern that they're going to start fulfilling. So the next story that I have to bring you guys is, well, it's a bit long, but I think that it's important to hear. It's important to hear and it's important to understand. The state of Colorado versus James Holmes finally has a jury, 19 women, 5 men, and a host of potential concerns. At least 2 of the 12 jurors and 12 alternates reportedly have ties to the 1999 Columbine High School massacre, including a man who was a student there at the time. The man, known only as juror number 737, fled the building safely, but was childhood friends with the gunman and went to prom with one of the victims. The niece of juror number 535 is also a Columbine survivor, according to Fox 31 in Denver. The woman's niece escaped physical injury but was in the cafeteria that the killers tried to bomb. Both jurors were handpicked from a pool of thousands to decide if Holmes is guilty in the Colorado movie theater rampage that left 12 people dead and 70 others wounded in 2012, which we all know there is a lot of evidence that this whole thing is false flagged, but we're not going to get into that right now. The 3-month election or selection process involved summonizing 9,000 candidates, the largest jury summons in U.S. history. Now, to the part that is, to me, I think very telling with how this whole thing is going to go. Last month, Judge Carlos Seymour ruled against a request to move the trial. That's when he also approved juror number 737 to continue in the jury pool after the man said that he could not be, or said that he could be impartial. After a decade of therapy to get over the shooting, and after giving it tons of thought, he told the judge that his experience at Columbine might make him a better juror. In a quote from him, "If I was helping the defense, I would be concerned about that juror." Robert B. Hirschholm, a veteran jury and trial consultant, told Yahoo News via email. "He has been the victim of a horrific trauma, and this case would likely re-victimize him. Post-trauma stress disorder is a very realistic possibility with this juror in particular." So you can see that with all of this going on, they are stacking the deck. They are stacking the deck that this is the story that they're planning on telling that is going to fall right into the official story. They're not going to deviate basically from the script in any way. So this is something I think important to look at because this is how it always goes. This is blatant pandering to the official story. Instead of looking for the evidence and instead of giving this person a fair trial in front of a jury of their peers, they are stacking the deck as much against him as they possibly can because he has already been tried, prosecuted in the court of public opinion, so to speak. If you look at what all happened during the media explosion that happened after the Aurora shootings, you can see that what they were trying to do was what they always try to do. They were basically forcing the mass public to decide that this guy was guilty before even any kind of evidence came forward. And there is a lot of evidence to show that what happened in Aurora is not what happened in the official story. And if you guys look into it really good and deep, do the research for yourselves, you're going to see some questions that really need to be answered. So I definitely wanted to bring that story out to you guys so that you guys could see basically how things are going to be going. It's pretty important. Now, I'm going to go ahead and take a break here. I do have a couple of other news stories that I want to bring you guys, but I'll bring them to you after I get through the break, because they do relate to the rest of the topic of the evening, which is education and the way that the educational system basically has been operating. So stick around with us, guys. We'll be back in just a few minutes after these messages.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of LateNightInTheMidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of LateNightInTheMidlands.com and help us help you.
So I'll admit it. I'm a geek. I love anything science fiction or fantasy. I love to collect things that are related to the things that I like. There's a place that I go to find unique things. It's an Etsy shop that's called The Geeky Stitcher. They have some amazing and one-of-a-kind handcrafted collectibles on a lot of my favorite science fiction and fantasy-related shows and movies. You know, geek stuff. They have things like gloves that look just like the TARDIS from Doctor Who. They have crocheted figures from Star Trek, Disney movies, even Navi from The Legend of Zelda. They're all made with love. And they have a unique style, and best of all, they're cheaply priced. They'll even do custom orders. All you have to do is let them know what you would like to see made, and they'll get right on it. Check them out today at thegeekystitcher.etsy.com, or you can also go to their Facebook fan page, which is found at The Geeky Stitcher. Go there today. I'm sure you guys will find something that you would really, really love.
There is a better radio show, beyond that which is known to the people. It is a radio show more informative than others, and as timeless as infinity. It is the equilibrium between light and dark, between the sheeple and the paranormal, and it is heard at the base of man's ignorance and at the summit of his knowledge. This is the radio show of imagination, a show we call The Secret Teachings.
You know, there are times when you have to just kind of sit back and listen to music that's like that, just to kind of reset the mind and reset the attitudes and, I don't know, come to a better balance inside. You know, just something really nice and beautiful and epic and uplifting and wonderful. And it makes my heart sing, and it makes my soul just kind of shout out and just, I don't know. It's very hard to describe. I guess if you listen to that kind of music often, you kind of get an understanding of where I'm coming from with it. Anyways, so that's called Between Worlds, and it's by a guy named Roger Subarana, and it's a really beautiful piece of music. So before we took the break there, I was talking about some of the news things that I've run across over the past couple of days, and I wanted to get into the education topic for sure, and I'm going to get to that here in just a little bit. But before I get to that, I wanted to speak to you guys about one other thing that I ran across that is really, really important for you guys to hear, and that's why I'm doing it like right here, fresh after the break, making sure that everybody kind of gets as much attention onto it as we can. So yesterday, yesterday, Wednesday, for me, because I recorded this show previously, there was an issue that ended up happening in Congress that I felt that you guys really needed to hear, because this is where things are going. This is where we're being led. So let me read a little bit of an article to you here regarding it, and then I'm going to play you the audio from this particular thing. So, bloggers, conspiracy theorists, and people who challenge establishment narratives on the internet were all likened to ISIS terrorists during a chilling congressional hearing, which took place yesterday, Wednesday. As linguist Noam Chomsky said, the idea that there should be a network reaching people, which does not repeat the U.S. propaganda system, is intolerable to the U.S. establishment. The hearing, hosted by House Foreign Relations Committee, was titled Confronting Russia's Weaponization of Information, and accused Russian state broadcaster RT, or Russian Times, of weaponizing conspiracy theories to spread propaganda. One of the speakers giving testimony was the former RT host Liz Wall, who made a public spectacle of quitting Russian state media last year in an incident stage managed by neocon James Kirchick, himself a former employee of Radio Free Europe, a state media outlet. Now, I wanted to play you guys the particular audio that's in relation to all of this so that you guys can get a really good idea of the type of things that we're now facing in this, I guess you could say, field that we, like here at Open Eyes Network and the Late Night in the Midlands Network, K98 Talk, which also runs my show. Thank you guys. I really appreciate it. All of these networks try to get out information, try to go against what the official stories are, because the official stories are nothing but lies. Every single time. Lies. So when we're hit with lies, you have to tell the truth, right? That's not a conspiracy theory. That's trying to get information out to people. But because that goes against the status quo, because that goes against the party line and the official story, we are demonized for it. We are confronted with it on a constant basis, saying, you guys are liars, you guys are shills, you guys don't know what you're talking about. And now, apparently, we're also terrorists on the level of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Now, who didn't see this crap coming? So listen to this audio. This is directly from the congressional hearing. It's a few minutes long. Please pay very close attention. This is very important.
One of the questions I'm interested in here is that usually around the globe, people hunger for information, and especially when they think they're being denied facts. But what seems to be happening in Russia is that people begin to presume that these conspiracies are in fact true, as they're, introduced to this on a daily basis. You repeat it over and over and over again, and suddenly the conspiratorial theories begin to take on a life of its own. And I wondered if maybe the panelists could explain the factors that make this Russian disinformation campaign so seemingly so effective from some of the polling I've seen inside Russia in terms of the credibility that people have to information which would logic would contradict. But also I was going to ask you a little bit about the platform that it provides for fringe and radical views, not just in Russia but worldwide, as sort of the extreme fringe is given a platform for what otherwise would not be considered reputable television. You know, most broadcasts wouldn't have on the types of voices with these conspiratorial theories. But maybe you could explain the process that RT undertakes to select its experts. And I'll just turn it over to the panel for your responses.
That's an interesting question, selecting the experts, because that word, I think, is used loosely in Russian television. Essentially, anybody that is an expert is somebody that is willing to toe the Russian line and to, they could be from the far left, they could be from the far right, they could have unconventional, deranged theories. It didn't matter, and sometimes the producers would scour the internet for these experts. So what qualifies as an expert, it's kind of murky what that is. And why it's effective, I think you had mentioned that it provides this voice for fringe voices, extremists, and it works because it provides a place for these people, a place where these people can congregate and feed off of each other's biases. It's almost like a community that is almost like a cult, I would say, that is formed online, and they mobilize and they feel like they are part of some enlightened fight against the establishment, that they and they find a home. They find a place where they're heard, and they find a sense of belonging. They find an outlet where they can a platform to voice their deranged views. And I know that formerly of Radio Free Europe, Mr. Lack, who has since departed, had gotten a lot of criticism for comparing Russia Today and Russian propaganda to ISIS propaganda. And while, yes, there is a strong difference, we're talking about a terrorist organization versus a government, a nation state, I think he did have credence in comparing the strategy that's there by using the internet to mobilize people that feel displaced, that feel like they've been on the outskirts of society, and give them a place where they can find a sense of belonging and maybe make a difference in their own way.
Okay, so I have to pause it there for a moment because before I go off and do a Rambo here. So you catch that. Right there basically is where it's said, you know, that comparing people like us who come onto the different news channels, the come out here with our voices to try to say, hey, we see things going wrong. We're terrorists. We literally are a terrorist organization. So, for instance, us here at Late Night in the Midlands, when we are talking about these different issues that are going on, we are engaging in terrorist activities. That is what this claim is. That is what they're trying to persuade people into thinking. This is the mind control that's going on. This is the crap that they're spewing now as their words. You know, this is the line that they're starting to follow. This is how McCarthyism started, people. This is exactly the kind of stuff, and funnily enough, relating to the exact same thing, communism regarding Russia, McCarthyism. This is how it all started. It started off by these people like this piece of junk woman who come forward and say, well, those who think outside of the box, those who think away from what the mainstream says is the right way to think, are fringe. They're dangerous. They're terrorists. They're organizations that are almost cult-like. Okay, this is exactly how all of that stuff got its beginnings. So this is how all of this is going to go. This is the cycle of history that is repeating for us right now. So we have to be very damn careful in how we proceed with stuff, because this is the things that they're doing. This is what they're leading us towards. Okay, so I'm going to let the video finish playing out because there's a lot more crap that they're going to spew. But I wanted to make sure to hit that while it was still fresh in your minds here. This is the junk that they're spewing. Here you go.
It's a problem, and we see that it's effective. We see that they are shaping the discussion online, on message boards, on Twitter, on social media. And the internet, you know, we thought that it would be this place where you know, it's wonderful in a lot of ways because a lot of different viewpoints and a lot of different people have a voice like never before. But unfortunately, it's provided a forum where disinformation, false theories, people that are just trying to make a name for themselves, bloggers or whatever, that have absolutely no accountability for the truth, are able to rile up a mass amount of people online.
Well,
okay, so I have to stop her again. So now, with her statements there, you can see that this is directly what they're aiming at, right? That it's people like us. It's people that do the kind of stuff that we do is exactly who she's speaking about here. Oh, the internet was supposed to be a wonderful place where all the different viewpoints could get their say, except the viewpoints that we don't want people to have. Those are not good. Those we don't want to have. But the free and open internet is a good thing. Everybody can come and speak their voices, except for those who think outside the box, except for those who can cut through the bullshit and see all the lies that are being told. Sorry about my language there, people, but this is beyond. Okay, let's have her finish up here.
I think what's interesting about it, I mean, the use of raw violence, which they do a lot of on their YouTube,
mm-hmm.
1.4 billion hits is a lot of hits.
Yeah.
So people will go to the use of raw violence, and then that will be used as part of a thesis on some conspiracy theory that then is played out. I wondered, Peter, your take on this.
Well, listen, this question, I think you've hit on one of the key issues here, which takes us all the way through the problems at stake. They're not fringe anymore, these groups. We're talking about a France where Jean-Marie Le Pen's far-right party is surging in the polls. We're talking about a Hungary where Jobbik, the far-right party, is rising and rising. We're talking about 20% of parliamentarians in the European Parliament having what we used to think were fringe, very pro-Russian views. Among the people who vote for these parties, there is a lot of people who believe in conspiracies, because they're working on a similar thing. Conspiracies happen when people don't trust the institutions around them, don't trust parliament, don't trust media. If everyone's lying to you, then there must be a shadowy hand. So the Kremlin is in this loop. It is pushing out more conspiracies to fan that audience. They are funding these parties. You know, we know that the Kremlin is funding Jean-Marie Le Pen in France. These are not fringe parties. This is actually now becoming the mainstream, and this is very, very frightening. I mean, conspiracy is, what is conspiracy? It's sort of a linguistic sabotage on the infrastructure of reason. You know, you can't have a reality-based discussion when everything becomes conspiracy. In Russia, the whole discourse is conspiracy. Everything is conspiracy. When a genuine opposition person like Alexei Navalny emerges in Russia, the first story the Kremlin does, he's one of ours, he's a conspiracy as well, don't believe in him. It's all about destroying belief in anything. When you have no belief in truth, then you can't believe in anything. But also more insidiously than that, look, I'm going to get very grand now. Our global order is based on the idea of a reality-based politics. Yeah? If if that reality-based sort of, you know, base is destroyed, then you can't have, you know, international institutions and international dialogue. I mean, I remember a quote from, I think, a Franciscan monk after the Second World War. It's like, lying is not a form of communication. It rids people of their right to live in reality and makes a reality-based politics impossible. This is a very insidious trend.
Thank you, Peter. Let me go. My time's expired. I'm going to go to Mr. Engel of New York.
So that, my friends, is the new face of what we're dealing with. This is a congressional hearing that is going on with it all. And this is going to shape policy from this point forward. This is the things that are going to be talked about for a long time to come. This is where net neutrality comes in as well. You notice that they start doing this right after the net neutrality issues come into place. Right after they put in the regulations of control. Right after they put in the regulations that state in them that acceptable things are okay, that legal content has to be there. They never describe what legal content is, so that's an issue. You know, they never, I mean, the topics that are covered on the net neutrality stuff are so broad and so vague that literally they could at any moment declare that things like this are not acceptable to be on the net, and they're gone with no questions asked and no ability for anybody to say boo about it. That's what's in the documentation. That's what's in the regulations. That's what they've got in place for us now. So this, all of this stuff, all of this fringe talk and conspiracy theory talk and talking about gathering groups together online and you know, a quote from her, by using the internet to mobilize people that feel displaced, that feel like they've been on the outskirts of society, and give them a place where they can find a sense of belonging and maybe make a difference in their own way, and it's a problem. Okay, so what is wrong with people trying to find a place where they belong, trying to find a sense of belonging, trying to make a difference in their own way? Why is that a problem? Okay, what is the problem with that? Oh, is it because they're not taking the frickin' drugs and getting a sense of balance and normalcy in their life because now they're medicated? Is it because they're concerned about eating right and so therefore now they have orthorexia nervosa and these eating disorders just because they want to eat right? Is it because they question the verisimilitude of the CDC when it talks about the vaccines being completely safe and effective, but only 18% are actually affected, you know, by the it has an 18% success rate? Is that the sense of normalcy? Is that the non-problem? You see, this is what we're facing with all of this, guys. So I wanted to make sure that you guys got this information, because this is something really, really important to pay attention to in this time that we're in right now. Because they're putting into place all of the stuff that is going to allow them to completely seize control of everything. I mean, they're already observing us on a constant basis. They only have to do a couple more steps, guys. And it's frustrating for those of us who try to talk about this stuff, try to share this information with people. And you know, look, I mean, I'm constantly asking people, please share these shows with people. I mean, if you see, for instance, I post on every single time that I do a show, I put it on Facebook. I put the information out on Facebook. I put it onto Google. I put it onto Twitter. I put it all out there. And not once, not more than maybe once in a week, will I see one or two people actually hit the share button. I mean, is it's dangerous for people, I think, to not, you know, to share things that are like this, because they don't want people thinking, oh, well, you listen to that show. You listen to that. You watch that kind of stuff. Well, I didn't know you did that kind of stuff. You must be one of them weird people. I don't really want to associate with you anymore. I know that's what has to go through the subtlety of the mind. I do. I mean, I understand it. And if you guys don't want to share it, that's up to you. That's on you, okay? It's not on me. I'm putting the info out. It's on you to share it, okay? But when you see these type of things happening in this world right now, and you see all of this dangerous stuff coming about, and you see that we're talking about it, and you're concerned about it, you're worried about it, you're talking about it, you're trying to get, you know, you come into the different forums and chat rooms and all of this kind of stuff, and you're talking, I'm afraid, I'm worried, I'm concerned that this stuff is going on. Well, what's going to stop it? The people are waking up. The people need to wake up to this information. They need to hear this stuff. And if you're being exposed to it and you don't share it, then it's just as much your fault. You see, I mean, and I'm not trying to down anybody or anything. I'm just trying to say this stuff has to get out there somehow. And I, you know, for me personally, I only have a certain amount of people that are on my lists, you know, because nobody wants to hear it. I'm sending out the information. I'm begging people, please come and listen. Please come and listen, because this information is important. This stuff is really critical to understand. And I spend hours laying this stuff out for people. And it's so frustrating when nothing, it goes nowhere. And then I see people talking about, well, you're right, or, you know, you've got great information, I love it, and all this kind of stuff. Guys, I love that. I appreciate it. But if at the same time, just hit that share button and let the 100 people that you have on your list know and understand this information too. Because I can only reach a certain amount of people. It's the same way with all the other hosts on all the other networks that I'm involved with, you know? We can only do so much ourselves. It's on you guys as well. So this thing that's going on right now, there's not very many people that are talking about it. I have not seen anybody else talking about this congressional hearing that went on and the stuff that was said in it. Share it, please. Get it out. Get it out there. Because this is going to doom us, guys. This is what they're talking about doing. Okay, out of this meeting, out of the information that was given in this meeting, and out of the one side that they heard with all of this stuff, this is where the policies and laws and regulations are going to come from. And we have got to nip it in the bud right now before it goes any further. So I hope all of that was understandable. I hope you guys got it, and I hope that I didn't offend you with anything that I said there, but please get it out. So I ran across an article talking about something regarding health, and this one relates to the rest of the stuff that I wanted to talk about tonight. An over-the-counter medication for everyday aches and pains may be taking away more than just your physical discomfort. Researchers from The Ohio State University studied the possible side effects from acetaminophen, the most common active ingredient in pain relievers and the main ingredient in Tylenol, and discovered that it can blunt emotions and even reduce the degree of positive and negative feelings. Yeah, so essentially, through the studies that they did, what they found is that the acetaminophen, which has been used for a really long time on a lot of people as a pain reliever, actually dulls your emotions. It doesn't just relieve the pain, but it also dulls the emotions, both good and bad. So one of the reasons why I bring this up is because Tylenol is used a lot on children. especially in regards to like fevers and that sort of thing. The, you know, like if you go to the doctor, the first thing they tell you, give them Tylenol, you know, give them acetaminophen. They'll even give you prescriptions for it. And so giving this stuff to children, dulling their emotions, you know, and that relates then, you know, these medical issues, these drugs that supposedly they know a lot about, you know, it really does relate to all of the stuff that I talk about in relation to what do we do, or, you know, what's going on with our bodies when we take these different medications and we don't study the long-term effects of them, for instance. One of the things that I've wondered over the years, basically, and that I've brought to this show a couple of times here and there, is the different drugs that were given, antibiotics, the antidepressant medications, and high blood pressure, and on and on and on. A lot of them, they come out with them very quickly because they want to make a profit, and they don't study the long-term impact of them. So, as a great example, if you take, let's say, a pain medication, and you then have sex and you get a woman pregnant, what changed in your genetic makeup when you took that pain medication and is then passed on into your new child? And it's this thought that goes into the long-term things as well. What about the medications that people are on long-term? What about the really potent medications, like the very powerful antibiotics that are out there that can really devastate your system, your whole system when you take them? And then you turn around, you know, later down the line and have a child. Was something in your genetic makeup changed because of that medication? And now your child has a lot of issues because of that genetic change, you know, mutations and that sort of thing. So that's one question that I have in relation to when it comes to our children. Now, another one is a mother in England found herself in an uproar after she found out that her 12-year-old daughter received a contraceptive implant at school without her knowing. 1 year after Layla Rylands was given the hormone-releasing implant at the Hull City School, her mother, Bernadette Jessup, was shocked to find out that it occurred without her knowledge. She said, "I felt sick. The school asked not long ago for consent for her to watch a film about sex. I didn't give it until I knew what it contained, and yet I don't get the chance to say anything about the implant." The school that the 13-year-old Layla attends, called the Ashwell Academy, is for students with complex needs, according to the Mirror, which is where this article comes from. Sexual health workers from the city council visited her daughter's school to teach them about contraception. According to the news site, if the workers found that the students were competent to decide on the contraceptive, the parents were not notified. So the reason why I bring this up is because there are a lot of things that go on in our schools that people just do not realize are occurring. And there are a lot of things that happen law-wise that work the same way. One of the things that I've always thought was very confusing to my mind is the thought that when you look at the way that the laws are laid out here in America, and again, just because this over here happened in the UK doesn't mean that it can't happen here in America as well. I always have to make that clear. The laws in America are written very funnily when it comes to dealing with our children. On one hand, we have the fact that the parents have to be responsible for everything that occurs in the child's life. We have to be the ones that take responsibility for all of the problems that occur, as well as all the good things that occur. And as a parent, if my child does something, it's not on them, it's on me. So if they do something like they break the law or whatever, I'm the one that has to essentially pay the price in the end for it, because most of the laws are formed in that way. It's the parent's responsibility. They're the ones that are, in the end, responsible for whatever happens with the child. Now, you combine that with the idea that the students or the children could have sex, you know, go out and have sex. They're using these different contraceptive methods. And if they were to get pregnant, then again, we, the parents, are the ones that have to be responsible for that. Okay. And that's always confused me. That's always kind of befuddled me, why we are at the same time as being responsible for the children are also exempted from knowing everything that goes on with our children. Especially when it comes to the medical stuff. For instance, if one of my daughters was to go out and get an abortion while a minor, they don't have to tell me about it. I don't have to know. It by law, they are not required to inform me that this happened. And yet, if there were complications with this abortion, who's the one that's responsible for it? Me. So how can you on one hand say you're responsible for everything that happens with your child, but by the way, on the other hand, you can't know everything that's going on with your child? How the hell do you do that? How do you do both of those things? It's impossible. So you wonder why parents have as much of a mess as we do in this world here and now. It's because of reasons like that. And it's always really, I guess, gotten my goat, ground my gears, however you want to put it, to have this type of thing in place. It's confusing. So that's one of the main things that I wanted to bring up with tonight is the idea of how the educational system is going through all of its stuff, all of the things that it does, all of the indoctrinational methods that it uses, all of these different methodologies and laws and everything that are put into place as far as the school systems are concerned, because a lot of this stuff happens because of the school systems. So I wanted to bring up some different things that I've thought over the years, I guess I guess you could say, and things that I've run across that I have found to be very troublesome as far as the educational system is concerned. And I hope that you guys get a lot out of this information, because this is really the way that the educational system is done, especially here in America, but it's becoming prevalent worldwide. I mean, what happens, you know, here in America really does spread a lot through the rest of the world. But I'll give you an example. So in all 50 states here in the United States, they have federally mandated databases now that track the behavior and the performance of all public school students. I mean, they do this throughout the entirety of their school life now. From kindergarten onwards, they have these massive databases of information about everything regarding their behaviors, everything regarding what they're doing, who they talk to, what they're going through. There was an article in the New York Post that said that the Obama administration wants to use this information that is gathered for a wide array of purposes, such as to use it as a means to understand if things are going on outside of the school that need to have attention paid to, that that might be dangerous for the children. The administration wants this data to include a lot more than just their names, their addresses, and their test scores. According to a national data collection model, the government will collect information on their health care history, their family incomes, their family voting statuses, everything. I mean, all of the different things that they could possibly gather and database together, they want to basically data mine out of the students. This is literally it's a gold mine for the government, because not only is it a gold mine in the terms of information to be used as a control factor, but also because then they can use this database, just like all of the other companies and corporations that are out there that gather like customer data. They can then sell this data to these other corporations. The government basically can sell this data to corporations in order to make a little bit of extra money. Make a buck, basically. And that is, I think, one of the main goals with it, you know, aside from, again, the control factor idea with it, that they can make a pretty heavy profit off of it. I mean, I'll give you an example as far as corporations goes. I know this from experience. If you go to, let's say, one of the surveys, I think I've talked about this a couple of times. You might have heard it before, but, you know, pardon me, because I get new listeners all the time, so they may not have heard this information yet. But, you know, if you go to one of those surveys that you see on Facebook, you know, what kind of past life did you have? What's your favorite color? All of that kind of stuff. You know, you go and you take one of these surveys, and at the end of the survey, they say, you know, like and share this result with your friends on Facebook. So you go on to the Facebook, you hit that button, the like button or whatever, and you share it on your wall. And what you see, and you click OK, you know, to accept their terms, basically. And they say in there, we're going to have your email address. We're going to have your friends list. We're going to have your timeline, all the data that's on your timeline, all of this stuff. You know, it's all collected. It's all collected and databased. And then they sell it to other companies as a way to gather advertising and gather better targeted data, essentially, is what it comes down to. The more they know about you, the more personalized they can make any advertisements to you, and you'll basically be forced into buying whatever product they put in front of you because of this mind control mechanism that they have developed. And you might think I'm crazy, but this is the truth, okay? So That is one thing that is done as far as data collection is concerned. And if you don't think that the federal government can't and won't do this kind of thing, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. So they plan on databasing everything that they can get a hold of. I mean, they already do. They already do. That's what the whole NSA PRISM stuff is about. All of this stuff is designed to gather as much about you as they possibly can get a hold of, because then they'll be able to better target anything that they want to you. And the first step with all of that is involved with the schools, because if they can get you young, then they've got you all the time. They've got you for the entirety of your life. So, of course, they started with the school. I mean, children give out information freely. They don't have that mechanism yet in the head to not talk about stuff. If something's going on at home, they talk about it, whether you like it or not. So all of that stuff is databased. It's collected, and it's used Whether you like it or not and whether you believe it or not, that is the truth. So one other thing that children basically are being exposed to on a constant basis in schools is in regards to the whole eco thing, the whole, well, I guess you could say green movement, for lack of better words. In a lot of places around the country, children are trained and educated, forced to monitor their parents, to correct them when they're not being environmentally friendly. Again, from the New York Times, an article about this that I found was interesting was from a woman named, let me see here. I think it was Betsy Ross or Betty Ross or something like that. Anyway, she said, "I have very, very environmentally conscious children, more so than me, I'm embarrassed to say. They're on my case about getting a hybrid car. They want me to replace all the light bulbs in the house with energy-saving bulbs." This type of thing is essentially what you could almost call it a radical environmentalist type of attitude. This is the really, I guess you could say, extremist environmentalists. There's a big problem with that kind of an environmentalist. And I mean, it's that way with any extremist, right? It's that way with any kind of extremism in any way, shape, or form. And you guys know that that is something that I am extreme against. But, you know, one thing that I ran across a while back was a picture. I think it was one of those meme pictures that you see being passed around on Facebook once in a while. And one of the, what it said was essentially, if the population of the Earth keeps continuing growing as it is, we're going to need another planet by the year 2050 because we won't be able to support anybody on this planet anymore. And the response that I have to that is that it's not a problem of the people, you know, the amount of people that are here. It's the way that people live here. There are, yes, a lot of problems with the way that people live as far as being ecologically thinking or ecologically friendly is concerned. But that doesn't mean that we have too many people. You know, that doesn't mean that we need to have this agenda of let's kill off 90% of the people because that's the way that it should be, like the Georgia Guidestones have to say, essentially. You see this happening a lot. You see a lot of people that are out there that are talking about this kind of stuff. And I mean, well, and just to finish off that point, if you were to live, you know, like if we as human beings were to live as densely as they do in, let's say, New York or Manhattan, the entirety of humanity, all 7 billion of us, could live in an area no bigger than New Zealand, and the rest of the world would be completely free to do whatever it is that it wants to do. So, you know, it's not a matter, again, of too many people being here. It's what the people do and how they're living that is the problem. Okay, so I just wanted to kind of clarify all of that. But, you know, again, they do this with the school children. This is an indoctrination program that's going on with the school children to basically, again, start them out as young as they can be into thinking that you need to be as radical environmentally as you can be. And so they're being raised up with this type of radical environmentalism in mind, and that really is a problem. There's nothing wrong with thinking environmentally friendly, but there is a problem in thinking that what it takes to get there are some of the methods that these people use. So real quick, guys, I'm going to take my second break here, and when we come back, I'm going to get further into some of the other indoctrination problems, indoctrination things that I've run across when it comes to our educational system. And hopefully you guys are getting a lot out of this. So hang out with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Open Eyes looks for the truth in all things, no matter where it may lead. Whether it is the paranormal, government cover-ups, the dark agenda that the puppet masters are bringing to this world, or aliens and UFOs, no subject is taboo or off-limits. Listen to Open Eyes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on the LNM Network at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Open hearts, open minds, open eyes. Have you been looking for answers? Have you been seeking the truth but can't seem to find it? Late Night in the Midlands has the answers for you. Whether you are interested in the paranormal, aliens and UFOs, alternative health information, or just a little hope and inspiration, we have a show for you. Late Night in the Midlands, The Secret Teachings, Open Eyes, Red Pill Reality Show, Brothers at Arms, and many more shows. All here on the LNM Network for you to listen to at any time that you want. Everything is free to listen to, and though it is not required, we are listener supported, and all donations are deeply appreciated. You will not find shows like these in the mainstream media. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com to listen. The LNM Network, where the truth has no fear. You may be suffering from OMS, Open Mind Syndrome. This disorder can be a burden on those suffering from it, as they see the insanity in the world around them. Symptoms of this disorder are likely to be not accepting the status quo, talking frequently about issues that are really important, studying things that are not acceptable by the mainstream thinking, and asking too many questions. This disease can spread rapidly, even over the internet and airwaves. It is becoming an epidemic. If you or someone you know suffers from open mind syndrome, do not seek help. It is apparent that this condition is actually the normal human response to information. In fact, it is best to interact often with fellow sufferers at latenightinthemidlands.com to remain open-minded. Open Mind Syndrome. It's no joke. The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day, you will find something to listen to here. And whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener-supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Flight leaves in an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, fine. We're going home. What about you?
Well...
Did you have a pleasant flight there? Hello and welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira Robinson, and I want to thank you guys for sticking around through that break. You know, it's been a heck of a couple of weeks, and I hope that you guys are really enjoying the changes that have been going on with everything here at the network. And you know, we've been working hard to bring you guys the best, and we're coming up towards the middle of the month here, and as always, things are looking a little tight, and we could really definitely use your donations, your subscriptions to latenightinthemidlands.com. If you guys want to support the network, you know, especially since now we're 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, we're looking at a little bit more expense with stuff, and we can definitely use the help to keep this network going. So if you are willing to, please go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. It's not very much money at all. I mean, it's less than the price of a cheeseburger, which is supposedly the cheapest and most nutritionally packed food ever created, at least according to studies that have been done. So before we took the break there, we were talking a little bit about the educational system, and I was talking about some of the eco-friendly stuff that's been going on in schools. One of the things that was in that New York Times article that I also had read was one of the administrators was quoted as saying, we're trying to integrate it into anything where it naturally fits. It might be in a math lesson. How much water are you really using? How can you tell? Teachers look for avenues in almost everything they teach. That's indoctrination. You see, that's how indoctrination works. It might be in very subtle ways. Indoctrination is not necessarily, you know, posters of swastikas sitting on the wall saying, hey, obey, obey, obey. It's done in subtle ways. It's done in very small increments most of the time. in other methods and other ways, basically, one of the indoctrination issues that has been happening, especially prevalently of late, but it's been going on for a number of years now, is the amount of involvement that police forces have with schools. And this is a very dangerous type of thing to have happen. In America, we have more prisoners per capita than anywhere else in the world combined. And that is, I think, primarily driven by the indoctrinations that are going on, you know, the different methodologies that are going on in the school systems. We have a couple of examples, like in New Mexico, a 13-year-old student was handcuffed and forcibly removed from the classroom because he burped in class. I've seen other incidents where people are arrested, you know, students are arrested for passing gas, for farting in class. When you can be jailed for a natural function of your body that you literally have no control over, I don't care how much you squeeze, eventually that fart's going to come out. And I don't care how much you try to suppress it, eventually that burp's going to come out. When you can be arrested for a natural function of the body, that, my friends, is a totalitarian police state. And that, my friends, is exactly what we have going on in this country. And it starts off with the school systems. It starts off as a basis in the schools. That's where they're training the students to bow down to this police state. All over America, students are being taught that the First Amendment does not apply in public schools. In a lot of places in schools, students are taught outside of schools that you have the right to free speech. But the Supreme Court has said that free speech, the First Amendment, does not apply to schools. It does not apply to students in schools. They don't have the right to free expression in schools. They have to obey whatever regulations the individual school districts have handed down as being the proper ways to express their free opinions, essentially. And in predominantly the majority of schools, they have no right to free speech whatsoever. We see this happening a lot, and we see this being extended out of the schools into other places, such as the free speech zones that you see at different events. So what I posit to people is, under the Bill of Rights, we are told that we have certain inalienable rights that are given to us by our Creator, including the right to free speech. The right to free speech is anywhere and everywhere. If this was a actual God-given right, no one could take it away. It would be there, and that's all. And you'd have the right to express yourself whenever, wherever, and however you feel. But just try calling fire in a crowded movie theater. Or, for a better example, again, the free speech zones that you see all around. These are the areas where you can express and protest and do whatever it is that you want to do in these little walled off enclosures away from public view and away from public hearing so that you don't disturb everybody else. But if it was actually a right, they would not be able to take away the right to do anything. It would be there, and that's all. So you see, the idea is that the right of free speech is not a right, it's a privilege. And that is something radically different. And unfortunately, students are being taught that in a very bad way. You know, they're being shown that as being the way of the world, as opposed to what my generation was taught. We had much more ability to express ourselves, even in school. We had the ability to speak our minds, whatever our minds might be, even if we were wrong. Nowadays, no. It's the exact opposite of that. So, another one that I have on my list here is what's happening in the public schools as far as sex education goes. And this goes with the contraceptive thing that I was talking about a little while ago. In schools these days, and if you listen to one of my episodes, I think actually I covered it twice. I did one by myself, and then I did one with Joe Long, my frequent guest. We talked about this sex ed program that was being put on in Oklahoma that was just beyond anything normal, where they were teaching that meth is something to do while you go out and have sex with many, many people for a long period of time because meth gives you the ability to do so. I mean, this was taught in the class. This, you know, this was something that was given out in the class. They were shown how to log on to specific porn sites and show their video on there. And I mean, it was crazy, the amount of things that were going on with it. And this is just one example of how the sex education in schools these days is taking a step beyond just educating kids about sex and into actually grooming them for future use, essentially, is what it comes down to. We have a big problem in this world right now with trade, you know, the whole human trafficking going on. And a lot of them are used in the sex trades. You know, 300,000 children every year are trafficked in the sex trade. And that starts in this type of weird institutionalized education of sex. Now, there's nothing wrong with giving a child sex education. It's critical. It's absolutely essential. You have to do it. But at the same time, you have to be careful of how you do it. You have to take care to teach them the right things as far as sex is concerned, not the wrong things, not the things that are going to essentially force them into falling into the traps that have been laid out for them in this world. Because there are a lot of them that are out there. And unfortunately, a lot of them are done by the government itself. And if you listen to any of my previous episodes regarding this topic, you would know and understand what I'm talking about here. Please go back into my archives, openeyesnetwork.com. Look up my shows that I've done as far as the sex education classes are concerned, and you'll get a real eye-opener on what is going on in the public schools today as far as sex ed is concerned. It's scary. It's disturbing to me because, again, this idea of indoctrination, it's pushed us now to the point where we have more young girls getting pregnant very, very early because they have fallen again into these traps of the mind that have been laid out. I've seen it where a student will get pregnant and within, I don't know, 2 months at the most, it seems like the whole dang school is pregnant, you know, because they all think it's cool and it's a wonderful thing. And, oh, look, we can actually get on government cheese because of this. This is how things are forming. And again, people don't really talk about this. People don't really share this information. People don't really get this stuff out. I mean, most parents, when they sign those consent forms for sex ed, as just, you know, taking that as the example here, most people, when they sign those consent forms, they don't have a clue what's going on in the actual classes. They just think, okay, well, you know, it's sex ed, our kids need it, so we'll just sign the paper here. And then the students get into the class, and it's something that is just radically horrific and mind-warping. And the parents never are the wiser because the children, they don't talk about it. I mean, it's embarrassing, some of the stuff that's done in there, you know? It really is. So one of the other things that I wanted to talk about in here is the idea of our children being controlled in ways that you would not expect, I guess, and that again kind of goes into a little bit of scary territory. In schools nowadays, more and more, we're seeing that children are being monitored by chips, by like RFID mechanisms. There was one example that I ran across that talked about RFID chips being embedded into clothing, like a jersey, I guess you could say. And this was in California. This jersey would have an RFID chip that was stitched in it. And when the kids were in school, going through their classes, going through the hallways, all of this kind of stuff, the school had sensors all over in the hallways, in the classrooms, in the bathrooms, and it recorded the movements of all of the children. It showed exactly who was where, what they were doing. They had cameras in the classes and in the lunchroom and all of this kind of stuff to watch everything that was going on, you know. And they did this under the auspices of, well, we're monitoring the children to make sure that they're attending school, that they're not being tardy, that they're not walking out of the school, and it's for their safety and it's for their protection. But at the same time, what it's doing is it's teaching the kids to get used to the idea of being constantly monitored by the nanny state. It's the idea, it goes into the idea of the state using the school systems as a parental figure and getting the children used to the idea of these state organizations being a pseudo parent. And unfortunately, a lot of actual parents out there just let their kids think that way. I know a lot of parents out there. Now, I homeschool my kids. Okay. So just as an example, I homeschool my kids, but, I know a lot of parents that are out there that they look forward to Monday because their kids are going to go to school and the school can take care of them then. And then they have the day free to do whatever it is that they want to do. And they kind of dread the weekends coming up because the kids are going to be around all the time and they're going to be, you know, getting into trouble and on and on and on. And that is a great example of how parents fall into the trap of allowing their students to think of the school, of the state, as being the parent figure, as being the ones that they have to obey instead of the parent. And a lot of times when they're at home, then the parent just, I mean, they're ignored, you know? I mean, the only parent that they get basically is the school. That's the only attention that they're given, basically. And that's a sad testament, but I know a lot personally who act that way, who kind of have that attitude, I guess you could say. And that's, I don't know. I guess I see a lot of problems now, like in the here and now, because of that type of thing. When it comes to schooling, I guess let me get this out, because this is something that's kind of an important distinction in the different types of schools. You know, we have like the public school education system, the ones that are put on by the state, the ones that are funded partially by the federal government and so on and so forth. And then you have the private institutions, you have the private educational system. The public school institutions are there as basically a training area to bring up the next generation of workers, of Walmart employees, of McDonald's employees, of factory workers, of on and on and on. We have this education, quote unquote, system that's set up just to train people to do that kind of stuff. They're not trained to think critically, to think logically, to think outside the box. If anything, they are told the opposite, that the opposite is the way that they have to be, that you don't think for yourself, that you don't think logically, that you don't think critically, and that you just listen and obey. Under all circumstances, you listen and you obey. And if you don't, you're severely punished. Now, on the other side of the coin, we have the private schools. The private schools are there as a way to train the next generation of leaders. They are taught to think outside the box. They are taught to think critically. They are taught to think logically. They're taught some of the actual true history of things. They're taught how to ask questions. They're taught that it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to find the answers for yourself. That's training up the next leaders. So we have the public schools training up the workers. We have the private schools training up the leaders. And there's very much a disparity between the two. So I wanted to make sure that you guys are clear on the different things that are being faced. And of course, most people, the vast majority, are involved in the public school system. And it's meant to be that way, at least according to the system that's in place. It's meant to be that way. Woodrow Wilson, who was one of our presidents, he said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but that there is a liberal education system that they only want a certain amount of the population to take advantage of. The vast majority of the population, they do not want to take advantage of the liberal education system because they need them to be trained up as a menial working class, as a menial labor class. And this was from a president. This was the things that were put into place, you know? So that alone should tell you guys that if it's at all possible, get your kids out of the schools and educate them yourselves. Make sure that they're actually being educated instead of indoctrinated, if it's at all possible to do so. I really recommend doing it because, I mean, we do it ourselves. And since we started doing it, you know, our kids used to go to public schools, okay? But since we started doing it, our kids have flourished. They have jumped leaps and bounds ahead of what they were when they were in the public school system. And they started doing it immediately. I mean, hell, when we first started homeschooling our kids, just as an example here, because I'm starting to run a little short on time, so I figured I'd tell you guys this. But when we first started doing the homeschooling of our kids, our daughter, Crystal, she saw the website that we had chosen as one of the educational tools that we would be using. And she said, "Oh, I know what that is." I said, "Oh, really? What? And she goes, "Well, that's Odyssey." And I said, "Well, what do you mean Odyssey?" She said, "Well, that's the same website that our teachers have us go to that we use to learn from. That's where we get all of our information from." And I'm like, "Oh, really? So we're sending you guys to school. We're paying all the money, you know, every year to have you guys go there, because obviously we do, you know, we have to pay for all their school supplies and all the books and everything." And in the end, it turns out that they were just using this exact same website that we had chosen at random to go to educate our kids. So, yeah, I just thought that was kind of funny because, you know, that's how this education system is. The teachers don't give two craps about things 90% of the time. Yes, there are teachers out there that care. And our kids had a few teachers that did care about things, for which we're grateful. But by and large, the teachers that are out there, they're there literally just to collect their paychecks, and that's it. That's all that they care about. That's all that matters to them. And when you have that, they're not very apt to be very attentive and making sure that your kids are doing the best that they can do. They're going to just do whatever it takes to get by, and that's it. So there's a couple more that I have for you guys here that I wanted to go through real fast. A thing that I ran across that I thought was really disturbing is that the students who are in kindergarten and first grade in the state of New Jersey are now required by law to participate in monthly anti-terrorism drills. Now, this is something that I've talked about a couple of times in the past, these different drills that they do. For example, in New Jersey here, each month a school must conduct one fire drill and one security drill, which may be a lockdown drill, a bomb threat, an evacuation, an active shooter drill, or a shelter-in-place drill. All the schools are required by law to implement this procedure. So I want to know who thought that it was a good idea to terrorize the students on a monthly basis, because that's what it comes down to. These different drills that are done in schools these days are so, so scary. I mean, I've seen videos of some of these, and they are downright freaking terrifying. I saw one where a police officer, there was actually a set of two police officers that they essentially went through an active shooter drill. What they did was they broke into the school dressed in camos and face masks and everything, broke into the school carrying shotguns and pistols. Shotguns and pistols into the school. They went through the school terrorizing the students. I mean, they would walk into the classrooms and they would, you know, force the students to get up against the wall and stand there while they kind of, you know, walked around in front of them. And in one case, they actually took his service pistol and pointed it at the head of a little girl who was standing up against the wall. And he was sitting there screaming at her and shouting at her to get down, get down, get down. And come to find out later, this police officer ended up getting into trouble, thankfully, not enough, got into trouble because that service revolver was loaded. I mean, he thought that this was a brilliant idea to go into a damn school with a loaded service weapon. Their shotguns were loaded too, and point his gun at the head of a little girl screaming and shouting at her. I mean, what if somebody bumped him a little bit? Boom. She's gone. Just because they wanted to do this stupid drill. Just because they thought that it was a brilliant idea to come in and teach the children how to be scared. Children don't need to learn how to be scared. I've had three kids. I know how scary the world can look to kids. My kids talk to me all the time about different things that scare them. Kids already have enough problems being scared. They don't need some cop with an attitude coming into a school where they're supposed to be safe, coming in and causing them to be terrified. We don't need this. We don't need this stuff. We really don't. We need to get away from this stuff. So that's my take on all of it, guys. You know, I wish that I had more time, but I don't, unfortunately. But I hope that you guys got a lot out of this episode. And I hope that you guys see where I'm coming from with all of it, you know. This is a really, really bad place that we're in right now, and we really have got to stand up and take it back. We've got to get rid of all of this stuff, because if we don't, our kids are done. Okay, it's as simple as that. And it's only us who can do it right here, right now. Share this show. Share all of the shows that you see on this network. Get this information out. Get out the information that this stuff is here for people to get listened to get available, to get the word out about all of these different things. Because if you don't, who's going to? If you want to go to the show notes for this show, they're going to be at openeyesnetwork.com/OE095. If you want to go to my Facebook and Twitter pages, those are at Ira Robinson or Open Eyes Network on both of those platforms. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. I'm not sure what I'm going to do for my episode on Monday, but I'm thinking I might cover Stargates. I'm not sure yet, but I'm kind of shooting for that one as the next show. But either way, my next show is going to be Monday, starting at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on latenightinthemidlands.com. Go to the chat and listen page and make sure that you listen. It will also be replayed at 7 o'clock in the morning, again, Eastern Standard Time, as will this show on Saturday morning. So, guys, until next time, keep safe out there and have fun. And thank you so much for listening.